You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Got to meet Chris for the first time last night. Very funny, very entertaining man, which is very important to me when it comes to somebody I have to listen to. And so without further ado, because I know you've all read his bio over and over again, I want to introduce to you.
Every word.
Absolutely. Introduce to you Chris Carvey.
First thing I want to do is play a little game called Piss Off the Fire Marshal. Seriously, everybody stand up, and especially if you're in the center, look down and see if you've got any coffee or drinks or anything like that. And I'm absolutely dead serious. Can we do these like in circles and help each other instead of like me doing the 1984 thing? We want to be like talking. I'm dead serious. Can we make like three or four rows of chairs on the floor here, just so we can actually
get thinking outside the box.
It looks that way.
No, just make it like more circles.
We can sit. We're in.
Yeah.
I apologize for the strangeness.
No, we're not good in a circle.
No, we're not getting in a circle.
Yes.
Wow.
I do not like the shape that you're sitting in. I prefer circles.
I prefer triangles. We have up there. Let's just have more of them.
Yeah, the delays excite me.
No, it's okay. So all the coordinates and stuff live in the Bay Area originally. Originally from Chicago, but been out in half the Bay for about 10 years, which is about 30 miles south of San Francisco. Online app, C Carvey. So, wait, where's Space and Jamie? Did you get your social customers like Blog, Serato's the company website. And I think most folks are using SoCon09, although I noticed that Twitter search has been going down a little bit, so I saw some folks using hashtags, hashtags.org, and a couple of other sites that are attracting the conversation as well. So really, kind of want to get a pulse of the crowd. How many folks in here would consider themselves business folk in one way or another? Okay, so pretty much everybody. Customers important? Yeah? Okay. In the report, sorry. We've got a couple of sounds, but really wanted to illustrate, and really again, I want to have a conversation of how some of the things that we're doing in social media, how we got to where we are, and ultimately how this is going to affect how we all, as business folk, when we're wearing that particular hat, are interacting and intersecting with customers. So go back to 2500 years, there was the Agora, and currently the only place we usually see that word is in the term agoraphobia. Anybody heard that term? Fear of big open spaces. But the Agora, that's where that came from. It's a big open space where people came together. It was the center of civic life in Athens. Within Athens, there are actually three agoras. There's the current agora, which is the big market where folks are coming together. There was the ancient Athenian agora, and then there was the ancient Roman agora. And these were the first markets, and we had the slide up before. Long before we all started becoming, or many of us started becoming marketers and turning into sort of this weird verb thing, market was a place. It was a noun. It was where individuals like us all got together to have conversations. And as part of that, sometimes business was transaction, but it was much more about what we were actually doing. over the next little bit, and again, really want this, you know, I've got maybe half a dozen, slides, but then really just want us to have a conversation. This is an unconference, which means we don't have everything coming from down here. It's us all exchanging ideas. The first type of market I want to look at is an auction, and I've got a couple shots here from Tsukiji in Japan. Now, this is a huge, huge, huge fish market. It's on par. How many folks are from New York or have been to New York? So, like Fulton Fish Market, but without the accent. But kind of same idea. These folks have every day this huge fish come in. These fish can go from $15,000 to $20,000 US. Ultimately, if you cut them up into nigiri sushi and, you know, makes it down to the sushi bar restaurant. So very, very sizable type of product. And the way that these work is they actually lay all of these fish out, and the customers come to the market. Now, the vendors have set up the market. They put their wares out. The customers come there, and they spend time looking at what they're thinking about purchasing. They're interacting with each other. They're sharing notes. You know, this is, you know, this one looks good. This one doesn't look so good. And what ultimately happens is we have this really, really, really high energy auction where the price starts out at some floor. And in this particular type of market, the price goes up and up until someone says, yep, that's the price that I'm going to pay and nobody else is willing to get higher. So, as a start, this is a great example of one flavor of market where customers and vendors are coming together. Now, go to Alsmeer in the Netherlands. What's happening here is the world's largest flower market. And they do these crazy flower parades and such. You know, you've got the decorating the cars, you've got this cheerful looking dude right here. I hadn't noticed the guy with the bag before and was trying to figure out what he was doing. But you know, they are really serious about flowers in Alsmeer. And the way that they do it, as opposed to what we see at Tsukiji, which is a typical traditional auction where things go up and up price-wise, what they do is they have all of these. These rooms are multiple football field size. What happens is there are these huge clocks up on the wall, and the folks sitting looking at the clocks, and what they do is they actually start at what they think could be the highest price for one of these lots of flowers, and then they start counting down. And it's an auction in the way that Tsukiji is, except it's actually a reverse auction. So what that means is, as the price goes down, just like this, just like we see here, folks are kind of checking each other out a little bit, looking to see what's going on, and when someone says, yep, I'll buy it at that price, they leap up and say, yep, gonna do it, and that is the price that's set. And so everybody's trying to figure out how long they can wait, and there's this sort of peer-wise customer versus customer game of chicken that's going on, figuring out when is the right price and when is the right time to jump in and actually make the purchase they want. So we saw Tsukiji being traditional auction. This is a reverse auction, which they also call a Dutch auction, for the precise reason that we see it at places like Alsmeer. If you take the auction like Tsukiji, put it online, you end up with eBay. And it's really the same type of idea. It's this place where vendors put their things up there. You can get all sorts of things. You can get motorcycles. You've got this dude who is selling a spicy potato chip shaped like a rose. But someone bought it. You can get absolutely anything in these kind of markets. But this is, you know, a place where, again, vendors and customers are coming together. In this case, it's in a virtual sense. And eBay is really interesting because you think it's, you know, one of the Web 1 poster child type organizations. They have moved from the offline world. Len, I redid the room while you were gone.
I was blogging about it.
The thing that they've done here is they've actually taken this purely offline, purely virtual, purely bits and ones and zeros thing and moved it And they do eBay Live once a year where all the vendors get together and talk about the different strategies that they're using to connect with their customers more effectively. So you know, we even see these things where things that started out purely virtual, purely digital, move into the physical realm. So there's this transition and this funneling from one side to the other, and both seem to work. When we think of market, how many people saw the Indiana Jones movies, like the original ones way back when? I mean, all those mm-hmm. great scenes of just people interacting with each other in the marketplace, in the bazaar. These are sort of the first thing when I hear the noun market. These are the types of places where buyers and sellers come together that I think about. And it's interesting because all the vendors are setting things up. Oftentimes, there is so much more going on than just the transaction, than just the, I'm going to go in, buy something, leave. There is a whole set of social constructs that have been built up around this. We've got conversations going on. Those conversations turn into relationships, both between the vendors and the customers, but customers and customers, vendors and vendors, and it really becomes a community, not unlike this group, out of which sometimes transactions fall. But in this kind of model, in the sort of traditional bazaar type of market, the transaction's almost an afterthought. It's almost a side effect of the conversations that are going on, the relationships that have been built. Sometimes there are transactions that is not necessarily always the sole purpose and sole goal of people going there. It's as much a social and a community gathering place as it is one that is solely for business. And if you take the bazaar and move it to Minnesota, you get the Mall of America, which is, you know, similar but a little bit different. But you also even have it in the neighborhoods. I mean, you've got Mike's corner store, and there's Mike. You know, Mike is a vendor who has set up his shop. In this case, it's not a multi-vendor bazaar other than the fact that there are a lot of different vendors who are sort of represented by proxy through the brands that they've built and the distribution channels that they have used to get into Mike's place. But he and, you know, we, if you go in there, eventually he's going to get to know you, you're going to get to know him, and this relationship goes up. And it's still a place where the vendor has really set the rules. Of course, we saw the exchange places. Let's see that. So, you know, this is the exchange. This is the you know, greatest unbridled aspect of capitalism, where vendors and customers are coming together. This is a little bit different than the other examples that we've seen, though, because in an exchange, it's really the third party that has set up the venue, and then different individuals come in, and oftentimes, depending on the type of exchange, you have individuals who are called market makers who can actually play either side of the transaction. So if you go to Schwab or Ameritrade or any of those, and you say, I want to buy or sell a stock after you're done crying because you looked at your balance after the last quarter, the individuals with whom you're interacting are market makers who will play either side, either the vendor or the buyer side, in order to provide a smooth interaction between the two. Now, those are all things that we've seen so far. Google did something absolutely revolutionary. Everything else that we've seen to date, there is a product, it's made, we know what the product is. If we're a vendor, we package it, we sell it, we try to get distribution, we put it out. What Google did was they figured out a way to create markets around abstract concepts. So you can go to Google and put in left-handed, for example, just this really random abstract concept. What they have been able to do is, obviously they give you all of the search results and you get the, you know, which hand do you use.
Are you abstractly kind of left-handed? You
know, physics responses, yes, as well. But over here on the right-hand side, you've got vendors who are selling wares that have to do with this thing that is completely and utterly ethereal. It's completely and utterly abstract. There is not a market for left-handedness. You don't go, you know, to the left left-handedatorium, unless you're on Simpsons. Mm-hmm. You don't go to the left-handed store typically, but here you can put in any concept, any random idea that you might have in your head, and chances are, in doing that, you are actually going to form sort of a flash market, a market that just sort of springs into existence if there are vendors out there who have decided these are the types of searches, these are the types of abstract things that we might have a solution for. So it's a completely new way of bringing customers and vendors together. Instead of knowing exactly what you're selling, here what you're doing is trying to form a little collective around this idea of some sort of abstract concept. Now, all of these markets, even including the Google one, were set up by vendors. So either the vendor is the one who controls everything from end to end, or in the case of the exchange, and I would even say in the case of Google, those are places where an intermediary, a third party, has set up the market. Everything we've seen to date really gets driven historically from the vendor side. And you know, we customers learn about the markets perhaps through markets in, and we go to those markets as individuals. We go to them to interact with vendors. Now, looking from the vendor side, typically there are three different things that they're doing. They are marketing, and we are marketing, trying to make sure that people know about what we're doing. They're selling, trying to actually get the transaction taken care of, and then after that, hopefully there is support that's going on. But all of these, everything that we've seen in CRM, in the customer relationship management space, has really, for the most part, been driven around these three pillars of marketing and sales and support. But the question then is, what happens if markets can be and will be driven by customers? So let's look at those three pillars of customer relationship management from the vendor side around marketing, sales, and support. Let's turn those around 180 degrees. Now, converse of marketing, really, if I was a vendor and I was marketing out, if I'm a customer, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to learn about places where I can find solutions to my problem. So I'm going to search or research. So the top search bit really is the converse of marketing. After I know what I want to purchase, or at least have an idea of the types of vendors and perhaps even the individual vendors with whom I want to interact, I then might want to shop. I might actually want to purchase something. And then after that, after I have purchased something, I might want to get some support or some help for that particular thing that I've done. Again, these are all driven from our point of view, the point of view of the individual. Now, in the vendor world, there's a very pairwise type of arrangement. If you look at marketing, sales, and support, there's really not the idea of community. There's not the idea of connection. There's not the idea of social in there. When we think about it, though, we have always been wired around that stuff. So in addition to those, we've got the connections between the individuals that are in a particular market, and we've got the conversations that are going on. So these are the actual sort of pairwise links that occur. Those are the actual words or ideas that are being spoken from side to side. Now, the big questions then are, if we are driving things, if we the customers are driving things, how do we let vendors know about us? How do we know what we would like them to do, and then how do we do it? And there was actually a case where Spy, oh, there you are. The story you told, I'm gonna get interactive right now. The story that you were telling me this morning about the pharmaceutical industry, I think, is a great example of this. Do you mind telling other folks?
Hi, my name is Spy Necrosis, and I'm a marketer. One of the interesting concepts that we, my colleagues in the staffing and recruiting industry that specialize in pharmacist placements noticed was that a reverse auction where pharmaceutical companies host a trade show and they explain their products and represent themselves, and then pharmacists walk around the trade floor, and they are their customers. It's just a reverse interaction that is happening on the floor, and it's very, very interesting dynamics. Some who come there for the first time are surprised, some who've been around, they benefit from it because the relationship then becomes, you're not being sold, but you are being a buyer and you make your own decisions. So it's a very interesting cultural and from a business standpoint, a very different form. So that's kind of along the lines what, Chris, what you were talking about.
So the customers, are the customers like setting up booths?
Right.
Okay.
Correct. They have, yeah.
So they set up the booth like Lucy did in Peanuts and like people come to them. Okay. So, I mean, this is, you know, I had never heard of this before this morning. This is super cool. I mean, we've got in the B2B sense, we've got requests for information, requests for proposal and such, but I mean, I think actually taking this into a physical space is super, super, super cool. Now, there's a concept, there's a project going on called The Mine, and I'll have M-I-N-E, and I'll put up some URLs later, where why can't we, or why don't we, how many folks in here have blogs? Blogs.
Oh, blogs.
Web blogs. Okay. So,
clogs.
Third half of the room. No. And what are the types of things that you put up on your blogs? Okay, so words, typically. Okay. So fashion topics,
video
and audio. So all of these different types of content we're trying to communicate. Does anyone keep track of stuff that they like? Does anybody in here use any of the social bookmarking services like Delicious or the like? So in there, you are tracking the URLs and sites that net. You know, I guess we think of the places that we like on the web. Now, what if we had an easy way to use something like a blog, for example, to post once a month just a picture of the label of a bottle of wine that we enjoy, and it's just purely for our own use. This is not for any, it's really only doing sort of a shared memory, a shared journal, if you will, of the bottles of wine that I've liked. And if I put one bottle a month up there, I'll take a picture of the label. I could put up a little video of, you know, myself and you know, friends and family talking about the particular things that we enjoy. Over time, I could be putting these things out. They help me as a memory aid, so I can go back and say, oh, you know, I had this thing with the giant bacon concoction that, you know, this wine goes really well with bacon. And if anybody knows anyway.
Any wine goes well with bacon.
You know, I can go back 6 months or a year later and see, oh, you know, I put up this post, here was the label, you know, bacon, tasty, you know, and whatever those wine adjectives are that you use. But at the same time, if I chose to, the blog is my space work, and my space, my where I control who has access to it, how often things go up there, I can take it down if I want. I control that information. Right now, all of the information about us as individuals, for the most part, lives in some huge number of vendor databases. So all of my credit card transactions, all of the purchase history I've had, I can go to Amazon and get that stuff, or I can go to my bank's credit card site and get that stuff. All of those things live in some disparate number of vendor databases. What happens, and this is a question to the room, when we turn that around and we start choosing to have that information, choose with whom we want to share that information. If I'm putting that wine information out there and I say, okay, if you're a wine vendor, you can have access to this as well. And I will actually encourage you to send me stuff that I'm going to find relevant. So just like on Twitter, I can choose whether I follow someone back or not if they follow me. Why not have the same type of things with a market that I set up around myself for wine or for any other type of product? And is this something that, you know, people are going to do? Is this a way that the world is going to evolve based on social media from the customer's point of view, us taking a much more active part in the conversations that we're having with vendors, or are things working pretty well now where vendors are going to continue to kind of set the rules and set the means of communication? I just, you know, what are folks' thoughts on that?
So in the past, you look at the 3x5, I've never been, and the quality of hotels, I don't know, is always better to look at what other people say.
Right.
So it's always, I think this creates a precedence, at least in something that we don't know. If you're looking at a Holiday Inn that we already know, there's, of course, less relevance. But the brand or an industry or a place that we don't know or a thing that we have not experienced, we're always looking for more information and how people have liked it and how their taste got out based on that.
Okay, and do you yourself contribute to TripAdvisor if you go somewhere?
Once in a while, I think we all fall short of the responsibility ourselves.
Okay, but still, it's in that case, it's sort of in the middle because it's not really tied to any of the and resorts or places that you go. So it's sort of an intermediary, but you can do things in there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different in that. I don't know if you could, like, you put 50 reviews up there. Could you take those out, or could you say, I don't want anyone to see these anymore? That intermediary still kind of owns that information a little bit, but if you took it one step further, you put it up in some sort of...
But then if I put it that, then how do I market that? The more relevant to a lot of people, that's the question.
That is exactly the question.
I think that is the question, right? It's about the vendor and how do you want to engage the vendor. As a customer, the information's out there and you share information, but you need to have control of it. I mean, data portability is one thing. This is, you know, not about crowdsourcing, which is sort of what you see with TripAdvisor and that stuff, crowd input. I think if you step back as a consumer and think about what you are, the transactions, the metadata, and then how do you want to expose that? I mean, it's about managing the vendor relationship and accepting that you're the consumer and in power. And, you know, while interesting, you know, you can say things about a brand, but the fact that we as consumers understand that information drives our decision, and we only are constrained by how we share information, yep, that's the empowering kind of moment in managing vendors, because it's 360 at that point. I mean, I think that's the question.
Or 180.
Okay. I'm Bob Schwarzel with Technology Guidance Services. Just looking at this from the vendor's point of view, if I understand what you're saying, so you're allowing customers to blog and post their...
Well, we're not allowing customers. Customers are doing this.
But, I mean, I think if you look at that... if I understand the premise, the idea is then the vendors would tend to flock to those customers, and it seems to me that could be an overwhelming time sink for the vendors to try to respond to each individual blog or each individual customer. My guess is that ultimately the 80-20 rule is going to kick in at some point, and the vendors are going to focus their efforts on the people who turn out to be their reliable preferred customers, no matter what the venue is.
Sure. No, good point. Here.
Okay, I'm on Seth Godin's...
I'm sorry, name and your handle.
Sure. My name is Saba. I'm with New In Media. And I'm on Seth Godin's Tribes website. I don't know if anybody here is on Tribes.
Yes.
Tribes with Free Ice. I've done my own blog for a documentary, and I've done the exact same thing where I've just put a picture up. We might do like a man on the street interview. And I've just put the picture up, no words. I didn't realize, I don't know why I did it. But so that kind of correlates to what you're talking about. And people have just come on and, you know, kind of commented and said, cool, you interviewed this person, or why did you do this shot, or things like that. So it's very relevant.
So just putting that out there was the catalyst to the conversation going. Mm-hmm. And a little more here and then here.
Oh, you're going
to
let me go?
Do it. I didn't encourage you to go. I'm not going to let you go.
Okay, anyway. Appreciate it. My name is John. It was nice to see that you put that up there on eBay. I'm an eBay power seller, been doing it for years. eBay was social before there was even a term for it. A lot of the things that you might be talking about in terms of marketing, in terms of customers, in terms of 80-20 over here, welcome to the world of eBay. Because everybody that buys, I don't care if they spend a penny with me, they get an opportunity to comment. on my sales, on my services, and you have to be very, very cognizant of your support and your services of those customers. And what really does happen is if you just take a little bit of extra time to make sure that you, whether or not they like you or not, just recognize that they are your customer. Recognize that they have an opinion. That's all you really have to do in that kind of space to make sure that that it doesn't really hurt your brand. Because I, you know, the more people that it's almost like they were saying before that it kind of just takes care of itself. It's like the one person that slams me makes 10 of the other people that were never going to say anything say something.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it kind of snowballs from there. Now, have you had any case? How long have you been selling on eBay? In ballpark.
Like 6-7 years.
Okay, so a long time. I mean, do you have any cases where somebody did that and slammed you in that public forum? What was it, and what did you do? How did you handle it as somebody who was trying to make sure that your perception was not overly tarnished by that?
Well, I mean, the best thing the thing that I learned to do was to recognize that my business is not me. So I don't take anything personally anymore. It's just water off the duck's back. I don't care, really. And I'm not saying that to be facetious or being, you know, bad. But, I mean, when you go to the drive-thru at McDonald's, do you think McDonald's has a 99.9% feedback rating? I've got a 99.6% feedback rating. My mother doesn't agree with me 99.9%. So, in that same level, I don't take that, you know, that great positive feedback personally either, because I recognize it ain't real.
Well said.
Yeah.
In response to the 80-20 thing, I think a lot of people in big business especially look at social media and say, let's try to not dedicate so much time to this so we can get some ROI out of it. And what happens is they end up concentrating on people that probably don't care about their brand that much. And in particular, let's say like Chris Brogan or somebody like that, who's very popular, very visible online. So perfect opportunity to become visible. They don't really care for your brand, so you're really not finding somebody to preach to other people about yourself that well. If you find those dedicated people, I think that's where the real power of social media kicks in. So you basically have all this feedback coming in, and it's only maybe 10 people who really matter, but those are people you would have never been able to tap into before. So I think that's where the strength and the power of listening and being involved in this community really comes in.
Hi there, I'm Patrick Carroll, and I'm not really affiliated with anybody. I've got four thoughts came to me just listening to you talking right now.
Awesome.
The guy that was on previously talking about Atlanta.net, the day that Atlanta ATL logo came out, somebody photoshopped it and underneath put rappers, rednecks, and runaway brides. I don't know. So that's one thing. I mentioned to one of the marketing communicators where I work yesterday that I was going to go to the SoCon thing today, and said, wow, we really ought to be involved in that. I mean, what do you do when people say negative things about you in their blogs? And I said, well, maybe you should improve your services. What the hell?
What else could we do instead of that?
Yeah.
It's easier.
So, third thing, I've been commenting on products on Amazon now for many years. And Amazon has returned the favor by inviting me to join their buying program, where they start buzz about products by giving the product for free. So, I'm sorry, I'm kind of nervous. So it's just kind of interesting that by being willing to put my comments out there and take whatever negative feedback I get from people, Amazon is returning the favor by giving me stuff for me to comment on. Third, there's an author out there, a guy called Charles Stross, whose books I really, really like.
How do you spell Stross?
Stross, Stross.
Okay.
So one of his books, though, I didn't like, and I put a one-star comment. And I called it, nasty little potboiler, blah, 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 blah. Well, months later, on his blog, he ran a list of his favorite negative comments of all time. And mine showed up. And this pack of howling, baying fans showed up in my mailbox. So these are 4 points apropos almost nothing, but they're just thoughts that came to me as I was listening to you.
Oh, no, but I got to play it off. No, those are perfectly illustrative of the fact that we all, as individuals, can cause these things to happen by going out there and by, you know, opening ourselves up a little bit. All of this really cool, really interesting, really messy, human, cool stuff can happen. So no, thank you very much. Please.
Hello. Sorry. My name is Jeff Prickett. Actually, this is my first trip to Metro Atlanta. From
you're not in Metro.
I started on Twitter maybe 8 or 10 months ago. And I always knew that everybody could see everything that was posted up there. And I started twittering about some of the technical problems I was having with my software. And nobody ever responded. And a lot of people actually stopped following me because they weren't interested in the technical details I was posting. But one day, a developer from one of the companies contacted me and said, "You're having a problem with this. Here's a link to some information." And I remember back about 10 years ago, I was working with some software and I was actually paying for support, and I was getting a customer service person, and I said, "I don't want to talk to the customer service person, I want to talk to the programmer that we created." So it's actually creating value where I was paying for something I wanted and didn't get. I can actually, if I hit the right person, I can get it for free. Mm.
So in the Twitter example, you were putting out on Twitter issues that you were having with company X's software, and at some point someone from company X heard this and actually started responding in that channel?
Actually, it was I was posting comments about configuring some sort of software, and actually it was a competitor said, "We've got a competing software that..."
That's the way to do it. That's getting it done right there.
My name's Adam Wexler. I've got a startup coming out over the next couple weeks. It's been 18 months in development, but something was said over here that kind of triggered this next thought. But there's a couple of key phrases that I think should be discussed. One being, I work closely with the bands, and I kind of essentially manage a band. And there's this this guy by the name of Kevin Kelly is a very thought-provoking guy who has this theory called 1,000 True Fans. And along the same lines, Guy Kawasaki, who many of y'all should probably be familiar with, always talks about the word evangelist. And I think those are some of the key things that people can focus on, because those, if you only get a few of those, and I know you brought up before those 900 Wikipedia contributors, those are much more valuable than a million guys who are just gonna, here and there, gonna contribute maybe once every 5 years. I'd much rather have those 900 that are gonna contribute all the time, that are gonna back me up at any point. And as far as the true fans go, those are the ones that are gonna support those bands for the rest of their career.
Yep.
His theory is, if you have 1,000 fans, you're set. You don't need the radio. You don't need any of all that publicity. You just need the people that really care about you. As long as you can find them, you'll be all right.
And actually, to the Kevin Kelly point, in 1994, he did a book called Out of Control, which was about how people and systems are starting to blend, and we as people are starting to lean more on machines, and machines are becoming more like us. That book actually literally changed the direction of my career. Just that, you know, he's been out there just making really cool stuff for 20 years at this point.
No, I just...
Thank you. You're such a gentleman. Desiree Scales with Bella Web Design. Okay, I've got a question for the room.
Yep.
How many of you today... Well, first of all, how many of you participate in social media like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn on a daily basis? Participate. Show of hands. Okay. How many of you today have met somebody that you met online, never physically in person, but you met them today physically in person for the first time. Quite a few, and I'm one of them. And that was so exciting for me to meet these people in person. And I think what this all comes down to is the personal human connections that we're making online. It's incredible. And in making these personal connections and connecting with people on a very personal level, that is what helps us promote our brands, our thoughts, and our ideas. And I may not agree sometimes with other people and their ideas, but I give them respect as human beings, and I'm interested to learn what they do. My interest is piqued. So I think the personal connection is just a very important layer of all this. After all, you know, we're not buying a service or a brand, or we're buying a person. I mean, we all look at the owner of Whole Foods, the brainchild of Whole Foods or Starbucks, and we're all going, wow, what a great idea. And they had they started having a personal connection by sharing their stories. And I think we were intrigued by the story of Starbucks and how that got started. And, you know, sharing that on a personal level, that personal connection. So I think that's what it's all about.
And just to rip off of that a little bit, you know, we could have done this virtually. We could have, and somebody's got a Ustream thing going. There it is. Hi, Ustream. Hi, Ustream. But we still feel, we not only feel the need, but we get significant personal value out of actually meeting face-to-face as well. Where's Brent? There it is. So Brent and I have known each other for
three, four years
online. We met for the first time in person 10 minutes ago, right there. And it's just one of those things, and I've noticed this in other cases as well, where the online connections kind of can take your relationship to here. And then, especially if there is some shared history online, that first face-to-face connection, it's a discontinuity. It's a complete step function that this trend that you were on here, all of a sudden you jump up here, and then it continues from there. And so, as you're thinking about communities and such, one of the things that I would strongly counsel is it ain't just online. You need to have face-to-face events, whether it's yearly, whether it's quarterly, whether it's weekly, whatever the right drumbeat is for the particular community to continue to make it stronger. That is absolutely critical to augment, or to perhaps sort of the exclamation point, the punctuation for the online community. We have to come back. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
When a consumer goes to a site and it's got a commenting or a review section in it, and maybe it's empty, nobody has made any comment or review, or maybe there's just one thing there. Well, the consumer is going to draw certain conclusions from that. You know, maybe that nobody cares, or the thing's terrible, or that the one comment that's there is something loaded by, the person that's trying to sell it or promote their business. So I wanted to just throw out the question of, what's on the next curve of this to generate more conversation, or to make it easier to comment or review, or, what's the next level of this? Because it kind of seems like, it feels like it's languishing a bit in that right now.
So one thing, huge personal bias here. The word consumer is a loaded term. There's a gentleman by the name of Jerry Michalski, which is M-I-C-H-A-L-S-K-I. I think his handle on Twitter is Sociate, S-O-C-I-A-T-E. And he has a phrase that I carry around, have a little dog-eared paper. When we use the word consumer, we're almost implying a consumer is a gullet that gulps products and craps cash. That is what, this is a creature that consumes the stuff that we're putting out there. So perhaps using the word customer, or even framing that conversation a little bit different, is something that I might gently think about putting in there. To your point, though, if there isn't a lot of conversation going on around a particular idea, is it that it's not interesting, or is it just that not enough people are aware of it? Have you not found those, you know, 1,000 rabid fans to go after? And you're always going to have that very skewed sort of pyramid of, and in really, you know, rough numbers, you know, 1% of the folks who are really active creators, the folks in this room, maybe another 9 or 10% for the ones who are commenting, and then 90% typically being folks that at this stage of the market are taking information and reading it and sort of, you know, digesting it around, but might not be actively contributing. There are some other things that you can do, though. So if... So thinking about the social space, thinking about the way social apps interact and we interact with social apps, really four things. Typically, you've got a profile of an individual. You've got the connections between the individuals in that particular community. You've got the content that they are creating in that community, and then you have the activities that they are either explicitly or implicitly doing in that community. So in this case, you know, we've got the content that's out there, and the only type of activity we can really capture is if somebody comments on that piece of content. But if you go on Facebook, how many folks are on Facebook? Everyone. So if you look on your wall or your newsfeed, some number of those things are things that are actively and explicitly written onto the wall, but I don't know the exact stat, but I would guess that well over half, maybe even 80 or 90% of those things are other activities you have performed that Facebook had the brilliant insight to surface. So Sherry joined a group. Sherry commented on Chris's wall. These are things you did not put those into your newsfeed, but they are there. And those, if you again, if you think of those four things, the profiles, the connections, the content, and the activities, think about what are the other activities that people are sort of implicitly performing in these communities, and see if you can design systems in such a way that they can, the systems can surface these activities, and then you can put them out there. Of course, you should give and need to give everyone the option to turn as much of that activity surfacing and even the activity logging off as possible. But it doesn't just need to be put in comments. You can have all these other types of things that people are doing. And if you can surface those, you can show that the community actually has a pulse and that things are actually happening in there, even if people aren't necessarily putting fingers to keyboard or fingers to, you know, video button or podcast to do it.
Regarding your question earlier of letting marketers enter into the conversation via the wine example, as the gentleman over here said, it's already happening. My daughter, Mary Daughter, has a standing blog. She was asking her...
What's the URL?
She'd rather... I want to get to the point. She doesn't want to let people know. She asked a very important question for her, questions about children's music to people who follow her. And I had suggested some emusic.com and other kinds of sources for her. But my question would be, it reads, an issue of trust. Would she trust a marketer in allowing a marketer to enter into that conversation? She trusts me, she trusts
SMS,
all her
social media sweater.
Yes. Which is a marketer from emusic.com. I don't know.
Wow, that's nice.
And I don't know, what do folks think? That's so, you know, would you guys trust that's someone who came in anonymously who was overtly
that's
a marketing product? One back and then two down. Would, yeah. Here's another two down.
Hi, I'm Darren with the Decatur Book Festival, and actually wanted to talk about mention something I've got going on right at this very minute. I started a auction for a beer 3 days ago, and that was right now about to close at $1,600. This is the first beer at a bar in downtown Decatur, which is where I live, and what's been interesting to the place is opening on Monday, and what's been interesting is there's this interaction between
the local community, the people that know each other face-to-face, bricks and mortar. So I launched this auction, and it, I went out to the local kind of news blogs with Indicator, and it just started happening off of that, and then the AJC picked up on it, and we had it on the front page of the AJC 2 days ago, and the bidders and the people who were involved in it, you know, initially it started with these people, I knew every one of them, and as But as it's gotten up, I have no idea who the heck just bid $1,600 on a beer. But and so this interaction has been really interesting because it's very social, bricks and mortar type, you know, face to face, and it's feeding. There's this feedback going back and forth between between blogs, eBay, and everything that's kind of created an interesting process. And I've got 11 minutes before it's over, but right now it's $1,625. Oh, I have to say, by the way, I wish the money was mine. It's going on to a charity for another bar that got burned down, so it's for the employees there. Otherwise, I would buy you a...
Hi, Chad Israel from Engage Digital here in Atlanta, and that question is essentially the world I live in every day.
The Marketer Trust.
Yes, you know, we represent quite a few brands that have sites, products, and they want to get those sites, products inside forums communities. A lot of times, those communities, those moderators, don't want to have a brand inside. And you know, I've been in social media for the past 4 years, and one of the probably original spammers when it came to MySpace, Facebook, and so there's a backlash, I think, probably from that beginning revolution. And now it's, I think there's certain brands that communities want to embrace. Yeah, and not every brand can fit into that space. Not every brand can be an Apple or a Nike or a Starbucks. So how can those brands then find those communities that will be excited about letting them come into them? So it's really, to me, it all revolves around passions, those passion points.
So the question, though, do you see it as these things are out there in the brand sort of, you know, parachutes in and does things, or are these do people who are affiliated with the brand, are they actually genuinely passionate about what is happening in that community, and are they part of the community anyway, or are they carpetbaggers who come down?
For the most part, because brands and people that are managing brands, marketing, you know, their images, they don't understand these dynamics. They don't understand that it requires that dedication to the community, the communication, and also the exchange of thought, content, and becoming active members. It's not just, like you said, they totally want to avoid that person or that brand inseminating or dropping, you know, from 3,000 feet just to say, hey, come to this URL, or, you know, come check this out. People are very skeptical and weary as to that type of approach. So us as marketers have to get definitely much more creative and more genuine with the way that we're going to deliver that message to those, you know, those communities that definitely could, you know, be well receptive if that message was delivered in the right fashion.
My name is Ray Peabody. I have a company called Peabody Interactive. I started in social back in 1995. I brought AOL to Atlanta. And what I found, and echoing what he's been saying, is that, what we always found was most important, I work with CityServe and others as well, is that a credible, consistent champion about a topic. And if, whether it's a marketer who, or whether it's an individual, you know, a community without a leader has a tendency to kind of fall apart. Someone that doesn't just continue to engage. And I think that's where the marketers who do want to engage in this communication, because you know, they can help to share, to bring the community depth of what they know about the product. But what's important is that they be consistent and credible and not be, you know, over marketing about it. But again, I think the important thing is that they be credible, consistent, and that they really engage the community, because you know, I've seen the same types of communities that I was speaking about before, where there's one person, well, that's not a communication. And I've trained other people on blogging and all that, but you've got to have multiple people. If it's a magazine that's doing a blog, have 4 or 5 people engaged in that blog, because you know, one person talking to themselves is not a communication.
I want to add, one of the things that I try to coach a lot of our clients on is that your agenda doesn't start in the boardroom anymore. It starts out in the community. And yes, brands, the community does want to engage with brands when you're solving their problem, when you're providing a service, when you're listening first, responding second. But if you start with your agenda in the boardroom and then parachute it down, you get shot down.
Oh, good. How many? We've seen these three and do we have time for a couple more?
How about one more? Hi, I'm Trina Newby. I'm with Women About Biz here in Atlanta. I just wanted to kind of give a quick testimony in reference to social networking. Two quick words, relevancy and social responsibility. When I first started social networking, my whole goal really was I want women to join my organization. And I was going around joining just a whole lot of social networks, kind of like just, as they call it, ho-hopping in the social network world. And I really wasn't getting, I was just getting a whole lot of junk coming back to me. And something just really dawned on me. Okay, you have to learn to be socially responsible here. First of all, know what you can contribute. That's really important. Second of all, get off of all of these 100 social networking sites and choose the ones that you feel that you can really contribute to. That's been about 2 or 3 years. And what I have noticed is I have met people around the world. I made a pact with myself. Don't ask for anything. Just give the answer. You know, make sure you have your signature where people can find you.
Yep.
And it's just absolutely amazing. The social responsibility that I have taken on has actually caused me to grow as a person. And I just wanted to let everybody know, because I'm business to business, and there are so many spammers out there. There's so many people that are just interested and what they have and what they want to offer, especially in the micro business community, that it is just getting overloaded with a lot of crap. And so what's happening now is social websites where people really do care in the small business community that are coming out there and sharing what they have. And it's a big, big difference. And what I'm noticing is that I don't have to reach the million. I just have to reach the few and be sincere with what I'm doing.
I have good news. All this conversation can continue at lunch.
a couple of housekeeping. Did you want to wrap up or?
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. And a couple housekeeping things. A, if you haven't signed up for 2 breakout sessions, you have to do that. Now, here's what's going to happen. When you go to lunch, and there will be some student volunteers showing you where the lunchroom is in another building.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.